This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
In and amongst all the general excitement over capital gains in the stock market, income-based investments seem to have gotten lost in all the buzz, whether it's because of all the attention from tech stocks in the US market or rubber gloves and healthcare in Malaysia. So today on Ringgit and Cents, I'm exploring the income-based strategy and its merits with Ng Zihao, Head of Retail Wealth Distribution at Manulife Investment Management Malaysia, Berhad. Zihao is also a certified financial planner and holds a CMSRL license from the Securities Commission. Zihao, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing, Roshan?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's a pleasure to have you back on the show. Zihao, when we take a look at the different types of income-based investments, right, things that come to mind include bonds, REITs, and dividend-paying stocks. Could you briefly take us through the key differences between these investments?
Sure. You see, bonds is basically IOU, and bonds pays out coupons, basically the interest. All right, and bonds does provide opportunity for capital gain as well. However, yield is the most important thing, and the coupon and the interest rate is what we are referring to. For REITs, the income payout is largely and predominantly from the rental income. But that doesn't mean there is no capital upside. For REITs, there are two sources of capital gain. Number one is from the price appreciation. Secondly, is from the rental income payout as income or dividend. The third one that you are referring to, high dividend stocks, is basically company paying out their cash flow, paying out from their profits.
There's one particular term you said there, yield. I think this is very important to break down because yield is the basis of comparing any income-based investment or actually most investments. Could you break down that term for me?
Okay, basically, the word yield is commonly used to refer to how much interest you will get out of an investment. For example, if you are buying an asset or investing into an asset that is worth 10 ringgit, a 5% yield will mean a 50 cents payout or a 50 cents dividend. So the yield is an important indicator of how much interest or dividend that you will receive by investing into that particular underlying assets.
Right, so a yield for a bond would be the coupon payment, and then the for the REITs, it would be the distribution per unit, and for a stock, dividend-paying stocks, it would be the dividend payment. Am I right there?
Yes, you are absolutely right. So in REITs, it's basically rental income, bonds, the coupon, and the cash payout from the corporate profit or the corporate cash flows. You're absolutely right.
Now, a REIT is basically a property play, right? And the distributions an investor gets is essentially, as we've mentioned here, rental from the various properties that the REITs hold. But then the key here is that it's from a variety of sources. What are the key points to pay attention to when we look to invest in REITs? What specific numbers or metrics do we have to keep an eye on?
Sure. That's a very valid question. By and large, this is a property investing. And, you know, when you look at your own property investing, you will be looking at the location. However, if you look at REITs, they are more than that. Number one, we will look at the occupancy rate. If you are buying into an office REIT or industrial REIT, you look at the occupancy rate of that particular REIT. Secondly, you look at the net asset value and you look at the distributions per unit. This is exactly what we have been discussing just now in terms of the yield and the payout from the rental income. So for the every unit that you are investing, how much distributions or how much dividend you will be getting back? And for us, of course, we look at the tenancy. Who are the tenants? Are they anchor tenants? We look at the lease expiry, the lease profile. They are leased. That is on a stepping out basis. When are the lease expiring? Of course, when we look at REITs investing, we also look at the debt ratio, the gearing ratio of the particular REIT. Last but not least, one of the key metrics, importantly, is the quality of asset and the quality and track record of the management behind it.
And what, you know, when we look at REITs, Xiao, there's so many different types, right? You've got residential, you've got commercial, you've got even the industrial spaces like the ones that have a lot of warehouses. You know, with the advent of the work from home phenomenon, do you have any thoughts on commercial REITs? Are they more risky now?
Yes and no, Roshan. Number one, if you look at, if I use a Malaysian REIT as an example, there is a REIT that is occupied by predominantly a bank and their employees. Some of them, if not most of them, are working from home. However, they are still paying rental because they are still occupying the whole building. Maybe they are working from home because of the SOP. Maybe they are working from home because of their business contingency plan. However, they are still paying rental. For some of the commercial REITs, unless the tenants are moving out, then we will be very concerned. However, at the same time, I want to highlight to you, since we are on this topic of COVID, we are also paying attention to the new norm, new economy REITs. For example, other than commercial REITs, they are telecommunication tower REITs. They are data center REITs. They are healthcare REITs. And these REITs are benefiting from the new norm, or if not, the COVID-19.
Thank you for highlighting some of those. I think that's important to pay attention to, right? And some of those factors that you've brought in there, these are all things that are potential risks going forward. And end of the day, all of it, it really comes down to how the yield plays out for the different REITs. With all the disruption we're seeing, do you see a riskier situation for REITs to pay their historical yields?
What we are seeing right now, over the years, REITs in Asia Pacific or even global REITs has been consistently paying out a dividend of 4 to 6%. That is what we are seeing. We still see the same trend and the same numbers going on. That was partly because in the month of March this year, REITs was sold down. And when REITs was sold down, the 10 ringgit example was becoming the 9 ringgit or the 8.50, for example. Then the yield spiked up. So for that, with gradual recovery in REITs prices, we are seeing a consistent payout to be expected for income. And that's why we like income funds. And that's why I think this segment is good that we talk about income, because the distributions from the REITs is still fairly intact, is still valid, especially for those who need a good cash flow by investing in REITs. The rental income is still good. The fund managers are still doing the job in picking out the right REITs to invest in.
Yeah, I just want to touch on one thing you said earlier. So we go back to the 10 ringgit situation, right? So let's say it's been sold down to 8.50 or 9 ringgit, which then in turn would increase the yield of that particular asset. But this assumes that the payout remains the same, right? And if in the future that payout does decrease, the yield would go down as well. What do you think about that in terms of the risk to yield?
So there is an inverse relationship. When price down, you will go up. So what we have seen for over the years, the 4 to 6% is expected. But another thing that I wanted to highlight is by investing in REITs, some of the consideration will be REITs is still paying higher dividend than a lot of bonds out there, and definitely higher interest rate from the current low interest rate environment. If I look at the bank's interest rate right now, fixed deposit for 12 months is in the range of 2%. But by investing in REITs, you still get your consistent 5% or so, even in this current market.
But that also comes with the increased risk gauge, right?
Yes, definitely. Different asset class and different investment instruments is different. Bank deposit is deemed as safe, but that is 2% return right now. That will take you 36 years to double your capital. However, bonds is slightly higher risk, but bonds give you the relative outperformance in this situation. Low interest rate will benefit bond price. Likewise, low interest rate will benefit REITs investing, and that will support the income payout as well.
REITs aside, we're going to talk about dividend-paying stocks in just a little bit. I'm speaking with Ng Zihao, Head of Retail Wealth Distribution at Manulife Investment Management Malaysia Berhad. You're listening to Ringgit and Sense. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanesan. Today I'm speaking with Ng Zihao, Head of Retail Wealth Distribution at Manulife Investment Management Malaysia Berhad, and we're talking about income-based investing. So Zihao, REITs aside, there are also dividend-paying stocks if an investor is looking for income. I think we mentioned that a little earlier, but as I've discussed on the show before with other guests, not all dividend-paying stocks are created equal. What are things to pay attention to here? And again, what are the specific numbers to be paying attention to?
Let me give you my perspective on high dividend stocks. There are a few myths about high dividend paying stocks, and there are a few reality about high dividend paying stocks. Number one, if I can share with you some of the perceptions of high dividend is they are the king of stocks. However, you need to look at the dividend yield. You need to look at the numbers. You need to look at the payout ratio. You need to drill down to the corporate profits and the corporate earnings that the company is making. And in terms of stock market investing or stock investing, of course, you will want to look at the upside and the capital gain and the price appreciation. The other thing about high dividend paying stocks is people tend to relate to high dividend paying stocks are boring because these are very mature business. They have got a lot of free cash flow and low debts. And maybe they are able to pay out dividends because they are not reinvesting into their businesses. Last but not least, I like dividend stock that are always safe. So how do I define that? I like high dividend stocks. There is low in volatility. That has got quality business model and good predictable stock earning. Last but not least, I will buy high dividend stocks when the price is attractive. So that will give me a good balance of choosing the high dividend stocks and understanding the different metrics about high dividend stocks.
So that's of course, those are some details that we need to pay attention to when we take a look at the dividend stocks, right? Because not all of them are created equal. And sometimes you can fall into the dividend yield trap where the yield looks really good because the stock price is very low. But that also sometimes should maybe bring up some concerns over what you're looking at. So when it comes to some of those metrics that you mentioned there, Zia, what are some of the more important ones in your point of view? What are the things that we should really be paying attention to?
Sure, Roshan, because we are still talking about equity or stock market investing, there are a few things that you can't run away. Number one, you need to look at strong cash flow. Following that, the long-term profitability and the sustainability of the corporate earning is an important factor. We look at the dividend rate and we even look at the dividend growth rate. The other point about equity investing is to also look at the gearing ratio, because that will be another determinants of how much dividend can be paid out. So we look at the debt ratio, the gearing ratio. At the end of the day, we need to pay attention to the bottom line, to the valuation, so you can't run away from the price to book ratio, the price to earning ratio, or the ROE of the company.
Now, when you look at dividend payments, right, Zia, it's essentially a company giving out cash or value instead of reinvesting it in itself and growth and compounding it over time, which is generally reflected in the stock price. When should an investor focus on growth and capital appreciation versus focusing on income investment?
Growth stocks are expected to grow at a faster rate when market performs. In a bull market, especially in the super bull market, you will see certain stocks or certain sectors that will outperform. And that is when you want to participate in growth stocks. However, we think it is a preferential among different individuals. There will be some associate growth stocks as higher risk, higher volatility. So it's a matter of your own risk profile, your age, your investment objective. Are you investing for retirement? Do you need an income stream? Or you just want to participate in an aggressive upside, you are okay with volatility. So that is the key difference between growth and income play.
Now, if I choose income over growth, what should I do with the payments, whether distributions, dividends or coupon payments? I think this is generally something where when you get the cash in hand, sometimes you have a tendency to spend it. But I think the general consensus is to reinvest it. What are your thoughts on this?
It is very much a personal needs to me. If you need income because you are at retirement age, you are planning for a steady source of income streams in your retirement life, then you need the cash for your income replacement ratio. However, if you have got no plan about the cash because the fixed deposit is low, you have a tendency to spend it, then the best thing is about reinvesting. At the same time, I would like to highlight one more point. Income distributions is good in the sense that it is a discipline to take profits consistently from the market. You may lose a little bit from the upside, but to have the discipline is actually good because you are cashing out from the market on a consistent and disciplined manner. So at times, cash is king, but when you need it, it is really king. But if you don't need it, put it in fixed deposit that is low in interest rate like right now, you might as well reinvest for better upside.
So Zia, when if an investor is anxious about investing in a single company due to possible concentration risk, right? That's anything can happen if you invest in only one company. One alternative would be to invest via an ETF or a unit trust fund, which then provides diversification instantly. Why is diversification an important part of long-term investing?
Diversification is always important when you come to investing because the old saying of don't put your eggs in one basket. I give you an example. If you invest in only equity, you are exposing yourself with relatively higher risk. And if you are okay with that, by all means, go ahead. Investing in bonds, the other asset class, will mean more consistent and more conservative investing. And if you blend between the two asset class, you will suddenly get a sweet spot that you get the best of both worlds. In our term, you will get an optimum of risk-return ratio. So the correlations between equities and bonds is very different. So when we talk about diversification, you have got all kinds of diversifications that you can choose. For example, you can diversify against countries. From Malaysia to China to India, you can diversify yourself in asset classes from REITs to equities to bonds. You can do a global multi-asset as an example, and you can diversify between a Sharia compliant solutions versus a conventional solutions. And I advocate a good portfolio constructions. So diversify is key to investing.
So I think this all just highlights the importance of financial planning, right? Whatever it is, you have to have your financial goals and your financial plan and why you're investing these different funds for. Is it retirement? Is it education? Is it for your kids in the future? Because if you don't have those goals, then you're not sure what the long-term trajectory of those investments should be. Zia, we mentioned earlier the unit trusts and ETFs. Now, besides fees, which I think is typically 1.5% for unit trusts and 0.5% for ETFs, and comparing fund performance to a benchmark, what are the other key factors to study when looking at different funds to invest in?
I think investing is all about performance and performance. So we look at the underlying assets. And of course, we look at the strategies and the investment objective of that particular fund. So I can give you an example. You know, ETF, the one that you mentioned just now, most of the time ETF are fairly passive. It's just a representation of a stock market or a particular asset class. If you are looking out for active approach, then you probably want to consider a fund managers actively managing unit trust funds with different underlying assets. So the track records and the fund managers' style in investing and the skill and experience are some of the very important considerations. One more thing that I want to highlight will be the advisory. If you get yourself into an investment, you may need an advisor to give you proper advice and plan for your financial planning. So with that, some of the key considerations that you highlighted are what I can summarize for you here.
Ziaw, on that note, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
I was speaking to Ng Zihao, Head of Retail Wealth Distribution at Manulife Investment Management Malaysia Berhad. Now remember, with all possible investments and strategies, you have to do your own homework into it, keeping your risk profile and financial goals in mind. Now you've been listening to Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanasin for BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.